Hello, and welcome back to the Alterity and Western Art Music Podcast. I'm Justin.
And I'm Drew. In our last episode, we discussed the composer Florence Price and how intersectionality might be a useful tool for understanding why she has often been excluded from the history of so-called great performers. As we have explored since episode one, this exclusion is a result of how alterity is constructed within the hegemonies that framed Western classical music. In other words, to be a female composer of color put one at a disadvantage in classical music, not only in their own lifetimes, but in their place in classical music's histories.
Since our first episode, we've been gradually expanding our scope of what it means to be the other in classical music. While we started with the relationship between race and classical music, in our second episode, we expanded this scope to include various intersectional aspects of identity, including sex, class, and nationality.
In this final episode, we ask what it means to be fully human. We look to issues of alterity in Western art music as it relates to animals and other entities considered non-human through French composer Camille Saint-Saëns' suite, The Carnival of the Animals.
Within the course of this project, we spoke to Dr. Rachel Mundy, author of the book Animal Musicalities, Birds, Beasts, and Evolutionary Listening. We talked about notions of difference as they relate to animals and those considered outside the so-called norm of American society.
Dr. Mundy's work explores the history of science as it relates to music and animal studies. It suggests that alongside music's discourse reliance on sound, such as birdsong, to delineate difference, scientific fields such as zoology and eugenics have also relied on animals as a reference for natural difference until the end of World War II.
For instance, one of the case studies in her book connects the early work of Charles Davenport in comparative zoology to his later work in eugenics, tracing how his work in measuring differences between animal species informed his work on measuring differences between human races. She makes a similar case in relating Jesse Walter Fuchs' research in zoology to his later work in music anthropology, in which he compared musical styles of different ethnic groups to an evolutionary model that put Western art music as the endpoint.
One of the bigger conclusions I've come to is that a lot of debates about animal musicality, whether or not animals' voices are musical, have served as a proxy for debates about marginalized human voices and about the value and worth of those who are considered at the margins of human identity.
If, as Mundy suggests, representations of difference between animals are often more than they seem, how do the different animals in Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals depict alterity?
They were kind of like parades of animals in a lot of French music, right? Like the Saint-Saëns is an example. It's a little procession. And one of the things that's intriguing about it, of course, that piece is like a joke, right? That's it's a parade of animals who are mostly parodies of human stereotypes. But it's not a linear, cumulative, Beethoven-esque, Brahmsian work, right? And I feel like there's something really compelling to me about the fact that these French composers latched on to that processional episodic structure that I think a lot of them drew from pieces like a Couperin suite, but then applied it, like almost all of the animal pieces are that kind of processional quality. Like that idea of a pastiche, a procession of sound, it relies on this referential understanding of musical style. And that is then a sort of function that navigates between human stereotype and notions of species, which to me it's just fascinating. And I think about the figures who were doing this in the 20s, and a lot of them identified themselves as liminal figures. So on the one hand, they were co-opting musical stereotypes, and they were certainly co-opting the hierarchy between humans and animals in this kind of work, right? But at the same time, I think they were trying to co-opt those things in ways that helped them to imagine alterity as something that could be recast outside of a hierarchical framework, even though they were themselves reproducing that framework and the kinds of stylistic references they made.
It is our contention that these non-human associations relate to alterities of profession, nationality, sexuality, gender, and age, especially children. This last category will be the main focus of our later analysis of the work. Further examination of the role of gender within the Carnival of the Animals, specifically the swan, can be found in the syllabus that accompanies this podcast. But first, some historical context is in order.
As a concert pianist, composer, and teacher, Saint-Saëns had a reputation for being a humorist. He often composed small satirical skits meant for performances at parties and at Carnival. He himself took part in these private performances, singing Rossini arias to the delight of his peers and composing burlesque melodramas for his students to practice the art of performing on stage.
Many consider the Carnival of the Animals as a composition meant for these circumstances. Scored for an ad hoc ensemble of two pianos and other various instruments, the piece speaks to a small, intimate setting. This conception of the piece has driven its reception and dissemination. This is exemplified in the words of the conductor of the New York Philharmonic, Leonard Bernstein.
My dear young friends, music has lots of different uses in life. There are pieces that lift your spirit or interest your mind or fill you with religious or passionate or dreamy or triumphant feelings. But some pieces are written only to amuse you. And one of them is this Carnival of the Animals by the charming and masterful French composer Saint-Saëns. For one thing, it's a sort of loony fantasy about the zoo, full of amusement and frolic.
This characterization, however, omits other circumstances surrounding the composition itself. In January of 1886, Saint-Saëns was in the midst of a concert tour of Germany, whose music community and press was vilifying him as anti-Wagnerian. This resulted in a change of schedule and canceled performances. During this time, he composed the 14-movement Carnival of the Animals, which received its premiere when he returned to his home country of France in the following February.
Subtitled A Great Zoological Fantasy, each movement of the Carnival of the Animals represents Saint-Saëns' idea of a particular animal, ranging from the Royal March of the Lion to the Swan. Saint-Saëns utilizes musical association practices that are par for the course in Western art music, such as high woodwinds for birds and low strings for the elephant.
More importantly, Saint-Saëns employs these animalistic associations to represent various people in multiple levels of abstraction and alterity. For instance, in the eighth movement, whose title translates to characters with long ears, Saint-Saëns employs alternating low and high violins to simulate the braying of a donkey.
Many have speculated that these characters with long ears were actually the music critics Saint-Saëns encountered in Germany, who, in his opinion, made asses out of themselves. Certainly, alterity applies here in the othering of two musical professions, the composer and the critic. But another significant, but often unmentioned, representation of alterity here is that of nationality. The harsh criticism Saint-Saëns encountered in Germany was characteristic of a long musical rivalry between Germany and France. And the braying of a donkey may also be equated here to the sonic qualities of the German language in which this criticism was written.
Of course, much of this is just speculation. In fact, there is little existing scholarship about this work in the English language. This may be due to the perceived lack of seriousness of this work, which may have made it seemingly unsuitable for the academy. We've already mentioned how the piece itself was conceived as one large inside joke for friends. But another reason for this perceived lack of seriousness may be its history as a work deemed appropriate for children.
And although it was written by Saint-Saëns mainly to amuse his friends, it was also partly intended to give young music students something to play that might be fun instead of always that serious grind. So we thought, as long as this is true, why not invite young people to come and play it with us?
Although Bernstein's history of the conception of this work is wrong, it is nonetheless demonstrative of the narrative that still surrounds the work. For instance, in 2014, the piano duo of Elizabeth and Sonia Schumann spearheaded a collaborative project that resulted in a mobile application that combines a child storybook format with the duo's performance of the work.
The seemingly innocent nature of this and other projects, however, cover up some of the issues of alterity in this work's conception. In a speculative essay on the intelligence of animals, Saint-Saëns has written,
"My opinion is that psychic phenomena form a long chain, an ensemble that may be compared to the solar spectrum, with instinct at one extremity and intelligence at the other. As we gradually depart from the human position, we find that instinct gains what intelligence loses."
Saint-Saëns clearly placed people and animals on a continuum of intelligence, and it seems that he placed children closer to the end of the animalistic.
Take, for instance, the 11th movement of the work, titled Pianists. It is interesting that he would place a musical profession in the context of a carnival of animals. Some have interpreted this movement as self-degrading humor, giving Saint-Saëns' own distinguished career as a pianist, but a closer observation reveals that Saint-Saëns' movement represents a particular type of pianist.
The musical material for this movement includes very simple scalar passages, which features the two pianos and develops through different keys. This is meant to mimic the warm-up routines of student pianists. In addition, the composer added a note to the score, which informs the pianists to play with, quote, "hesitance and awkwardness of a beginner," unquote. And just a quick note, there is some dispute as to whether or not Saint-Saëns added this note himself to the score or whether the publisher did it after his death. But in any case, we are working from the posthumous publication of this work.
In Saint-Saëns' time, piano students would most often begin from a very young age, and everyone would have understood that this awkwardness of a beginner referred to children taking lessons, but placed in the context of the thoughts above concerning nationality and Saint-Saëns' repudiation of their criticism, Saint-Saëns places children, and adjacently those with little skill in Western art music, as less human than those with high skill.
Other issues of alterity in relation to animal difference can be seen when we look at Saint-Saëns' view on the spectrum between instinct and intellect, and, relatedly, between animality and humanity.
To this end, we interviewed Dr. Rachel Mundy, whose work on what she coins as the animanities shows a relationship of alterity between the human and the non-human.
It's really an invitation to others that I think some others are taking up, in fact, to rethink the humanities through a historical lens that focuses on a series of pretty focused interlocking questions. Questions about personhood, questions about the relationship between difference and identity, about knowledge, subjective and objective as we know it in modern science, and also about engaging with aspirational fantasies of what types of methodologies and what types of questions and ideas will get us someplace more productive in the 20th, sort of late 20th and 21st century futures that we've created in terms of thinking like beyond the bounds that modernism has provided for us. So when I think about the animanities, I think one of the things that I hope that it does is provides, rethinking the human and the animal, it also provides a kind of lever to say, okay, if we rethink the human and the animal in this very different way, it allows you actually to get out of that categorical framework, right? Because now that categorical framework is part of a historical context rather than a given. So I think for me, one of the things the animanities is sort of intended to do and designed to do is to push back on the ways that exclusionary notions of human identity are so at the heart of modern humanism that we almost don't see them at all. And enable people who are interested in doing work along those lines to think forward, what in the next 20 years do you want to be doing that engages with issues of these questions, right? These questions of ethics, of value, of how those relate to music making and to historical works of music, without being consigned to the idea that the only way to ask those questions is to reinscribe the category of age, to reinscribe the category of gender, to reinscribe the category of race. No, we can acknowledge those categories as historically real, but actually knowing the history allows you to move maybe in new directions.
These exact issues surrounding the power of culture and difference are still seen in today's institutions, and unfortunately act as an impetus for projects such as this one. In a time where what divides us is more apparent than what connects us, we turn to history to ask why and how we've arrived in our present time.
One of the conclusions that I've come to, let me back up. First, I came to the conclusion that the human and the animal are codependent concepts. They're intertwined, that you can't really have one without the other, and that not only that, but that the thing we talk about when we talk about humanity or animality was constructed in a moment of history when those two concepts were always already about all these other forms of difference, about gender, about age, about sexuality, about nation, right, about race. And so when you say, oh, the human and the animal are intertwined, I'm also really saying, like, you can't talk about race without talking about the animal. But you can't talk about the animal without talking about race either. They're all interdependent. Okay, so that's a conclusion I came to through years of research and hard work. But then thinking about that also led me to the beginnings of an idea that I'm still playing out now in my research. And it was that if that's accurate, which I think that it is, if that's part of our inheritance today, when we talk about species, when we talk about social justice, part of what that means is that that's also the foundation upon which our notions of ethics are constructed, right? Ethics are about human rights. But what does that mean? If human rights are part of this very complex notion of what it means to be human in relation to others, human as part of a hierarchical comparison with others, and human in a world in which human only means some more privileged humans and not others. So when you ask this question, like, what would it look like to do an ethical representation of animals? One of my first thoughts is, I'm still not sure I fully understand what it means to be ethical. And I don't mean by that I have any doubt at all about the capacity of myself or those around me to live and act in moral ways, right? I absolutely believe in that. But I also think that we live and act in those ways with and through the burdens of history. And those burdens are difficult to untangle. And I don't think we've untangled them yet.
It is an interesting prospect to question the ethics of music history, a discipline within a field that bears the name of humanities, which so often purports a universality meant to include all of humanity. We must now, more than ever, address how we got here. In Dr. Mundy's words,
we live in a century in which nations, peoples, places, species, and we ourselves have been violently exploited or exploitative, harmful or harmed, subjected or objectified. The labor of extricating ourselves from this world asks that we re-examine the ethics, values, and historical lineage that got us here.
Although the narratives we have presented here problematize some of the works we discussed, we're not suggesting that all of us should stop listening to, performing, and enjoying Dvorak's New World Symphony or Saint-Saëns' Carnival of the Animals. Rather, we've attempted to combat dominant narratives of these works as pure, innocent, or abstract artworks removed from the politics of identity and alterity.
Musicologists have been doing this kind of work since the 1980s, combating the idea of an objective history of Western art music. There is still much work to do in marking and celebrating alterity in our music history textbooks and concert programs, including all the problems and flaws of these representations. Why is it that Florence Price is still left out of histories of Western art music? What might be the use of animals in Saint-Saëns' Carnival tell us about who and what was deemed the most human? It is our hope that our brief discussions here may make their way beyond the walls of the ivory tower, from which they were written, in an attempt to address some of these problematic narratives.
From us here at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, we thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you.